Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. This is why I love social media. So we just aired the interview with Austin Peterson, and I checked my Twitter feed, and there's a couple of people that are messaging me. One said, Austin will call that man if he'd like. Said, tell him, which is Rich, who called in right before the end of the hour, to send Austin a message on Twitter or Facebook. You can get a call from him if you want to discuss those things. Now, keep in mind, Rich is someone that lives in Indiana, so he will not be voting in this Senate race, but I'm sure he'd still talk to him. Another message from Jeff, talking about the F-22, which Rich brought up. So I did a quick search for the F-22, which is something the United States spent about $66.5 billion on between 1996 and 2011. So 1996 and 2011, their first flight was in 97. And currently still in status, there's 195 built, 195. Now, Jeff says there's 187. That's the operational aircraft. Apparently, there were 8 tests and 187 operational. So maybe, Rich, you meant a different? Maybe you didn't mean the F-22. Maybe you meant something different, but that's just from a quick search. So, I mean, they spent a lot of money. That the number you said matched up, 66 point some billion. But there's 187 still operational, with 8 of them being test. So that's kind of interesting. I wanted to point that out. Bring Austin back to answer his question, someone said. Yeah, I will bring him back on the show. I really enjoy talking to him. Got one more call on this. I wanted to bring up Leonard from St. Louis. Hey, Leonard, thanks for calling in.
Yes, this is Leonard. When I was talking to this one guy that called himself Minister Mike, he said that there's another person running for the Senate in Missouri named Austin Peters, and that I don't know too much. This is the first time I heard the name, but I will vote for Josh Hawley if he was running. I'd vote for anybody against Claire McCaskill. I'm not too happy with Claire McCaskill.
Okay, so for your sake, as long as they're opposing Claire McCaskill, it doesn't matter who the nominee is, you'll support them.
Well, it depends on what they stand for. According to what Minister Mike tells me about Josh
Hawley.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably go for this person.
Okay. What don't you like about Claire McCaskill?
Well, the way she supported Obamacare and everything like that.
Okay. Yeah, you got your concerns. Hey, thanks, Leonard.
Okay.
All right. So Leonard didn't hear the interview but wanted to call in to talk about the person. You know, I would like to have Josh Hawley on the show, and I'd also like to have Claire McCaskill on the show. I feel like Claire would probably not come onto the show unless I'm filling in for, like, Mark Reardon or something during the week. I don't know if she'd come onto the overnight show, but then again, I should request it. I still like to talk to Josh Hawley. You know, he came out saying about President Trump, who wanted to put on a military parade. He said that Missouri would love to host it. Now, tell me that's not a controversial thing to say. This is a love-hate relationship with that idea of a military parade. Now, I still don't know if it'll actually happen. I feel like there's a pretty big chance that once the advisors talk to the president, they'll say, this is actually a better idea. If you want to put on something to honor the troops, it's probably better you do this. And I have a feeling that there might not be a parade, which, truth be told, I'm not opposed to a parade. I don't think that the spin that people put around it, the spin of, oh, it's just the president trying to honor himself to show how important he is. I never bought into that. But what I do believe is there's ways you can honor the military. And, you know, there's things you can do for them. I don't know if you have to do a parade. There's probably other things you can do. But I guess I'm not opposed to it if you're doing it as a way to honor them. A couple things I want to get to. And I didn't have a chance to bring up the budget yet. But President Trump proposing a $4.4 trillion budget that came out earlier today. Not happy with the idea of adding $7 trillion to the deficit. What are we doing? You know how much money that is? $7 trillion? I have some audio from President Trump talking about it. In fact, even Sarah Huckabee Sanders was talking about the budget. Now, a lot of the budget is trying to catch up in some very key areas where we need to catch up. So funding for the wall, funding for infrastructure. There's going to be a lot of money going towards infrastructure. But there's also more money going into the defense that we need to talk about, too. How it's going to be used, how appropriate it might be. There's a lot we need to look at when it comes to this plan. And I still have a lot of concerns. I like what Rand Paul said on the Senate floor. As he, I don't know if you'd call it a filibuster, but he took definitely his time to prove his point. To say, what are we doing passing a 700-page budget that we haven't read that's going to be adding trillions of dollars to the deficit? I thought this was our opportunity to stop adding money to the deficit. I thought this was our opportunity to, you know, if we can't have a balanced budget, let's say you know you have to get an infrastructure plan in, you know you need to give more money to FEMA as we have to pay for natural disasters that come through, we know we have to put some more money for defense when it comes to the wall. Okay, I get it. I get it. There's things you have to upgrade. So we might not be running a pure balanced budget, but $7 trillion, really? We need to evaluate this. So I want to talk about that coming up, too. And you've got to be frustrated with him. It's a lot of money. A lot of money. We'll get to that coming up next. And I also want to talk about the official portraits that came out of the Obamas today. Oh boy, just when I'm about to bang my head on the wall or the desk or maybe a pen, just as I'm about to do that, I back off the ledge a little bit and I look at something like that. It makes me laugh, and then I can try to calm down a little. Yeah, that's, I don't know, I think they might have made a bad choice in artist in the way they rendered the presidential photos that's going to go in the Smithsonian. I don't know. Yikes. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Overnight America and Ryan Recker continues on KMOX.
Trucking companies are complaining that they used to take trucks from Los Angeles to New York and there was no damage. Now they bring from Los Angeles to New York and there's tremendous damage to their trucks because our roads are in bad shape and we're going to get the roads in great shape.
Part of what this big budget entails is trying to get this infrastructure update that we desperately need. We really do need it. But man, it's a big number, adding $7 trillion to the deficit. I'm looking at the New York Times article that summarized the budget that came out. I haven't had a chance to look at it myself. I mean, it's a giant book. I'm looking at them hand these things out. Scary looking. Why would I want to read an American budget of the U.S. government? President Trump sent Congress a $4.4 trillion budget proposal on Monday, outlining steep cuts to domestic programs, large increase in military spending, and a ballooning federal deficit that illustrates how far Republicans have strayed from their longtime embrace of balanced budgets. This is a shame. I felt like we could have had an example of getting something done, but we haven't. I want to go back to what just happened last week when the government was going to shut down. What was it, Thursday night, Wednesday night, and a Thursday, or Thursday and a Friday, whatever day it was, I don't know. But Rand Paul was standing there, and he was just pointing out what every Republican should have been standing for, but unfortunately wasn't.
It's no money. We're $1 trillion short this year because we passed these class plans, spend whatever the hell you can find, whatever's not tied down, spend it and give it away. Both sides spend it, you know, there's no tomorrow. But if you say, how could we change our government? Where would there be some money that we could actually save? Well, really, some of it is in our foreign policy. We do not have enough, probably, for our military to be involved in 7 wars. We might have enough to be involved in maybe 3 or 2 or 1, or maybe we should not be involved in any of the ones we're involved at this point.
You know, and Rand Paul continues on. This was him speaking for almost the entire afternoon, waiting up until there was a vote and kept pushing it back until the next night and through the overnight, which meant the government technically shut down for a little bit. The White House proposes now a $4.4 trillion budget, adds $7 trillion in deficits. I have some clips from President Trump I want to play. Let me get to Keith real quick, who's calling in from Centerville. Hey, Keith, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
Good to talk to you again, Ryan.
Anytime.
Yeah, I was thinking about that same thing when you brought the topic up, you know, how we definitely need the infrastructure and our roads and our bridges taken care of. We definitely got to do that. But it would have been cool to put out the budget before he went out and did the tax cut.
Mm.
And then, you know, a couple of months ago, coming out with the budget, or did the tax cuts after. Because that means that we've got less money to pay for all this stuff that he wants to do, that we need to have done. And
yeah, you know, potentially.
Yeah.
Mostly because, I mean, there's some other spending things that they added on to it that, and the way they assess where they think the economy is going in the next 10 years or so. So they have discrepancies on how they believe how fast the government will grow. I think because some of these tax cuts, they believe the economy might grow faster than it does. But even some conservative estimates of where the economy is going to be growing and the rate it'll be growing, they're banking on a lot to try to make up for this money. And even if they are very optimistic on how fast this government will grow, they're still going to have a big deficit. Yeah, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if they were maybe on the top end and having a closer to a balanced, and then we don't reach our goals, but we're at this point, there's zero chance we'll reach our goals, and there's 100% chance we're just going to add trillions to the deficit, which is not good.
No, it's not good. And, you know, maybe, and this would be political suicide to say anything about our military. Of course, we love our military. We want to keep the strongest, the best equipped, the most modern military in the world, and we do. But I think that this is just me and my little humble opinion. I think that we should really have a military reform and find out exactly where all of that money's going. I think in 16 we spent $600 billion on our military. We want to make sure if it's that much money, somebody's got to be stealing, because there's crooked people on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah,
and all of that money is not getting to our heroes and our soldiers around the world. You know, those guys make like, I don't know, less than 30 grand a year. And I remember during the Iraqi war, they were sending people over there to wash their clothes that were making $100 million a year.
Hmm.
So, you know, somebody's stealing. And I don't think that. It wouldn't be to make our military weaker. It would be to make our military stronger.
Mm.
I think that if we had a military reform bill where they really audited and find out where and who was getting all of that money before we go out and give them another huge couple more billion, not that they don't deserve it, but we want to make them stronger and make sure that money's getting where it's supposed to go.
Yeah, Keith, I want to point out a couple of things you said. Now, that money that came up missing from the Pentagon, they are going to put an audit together for that. It's going to cost a ton of money, but they are putting an audit together to try to account for some of that money, which is a good thing. Plus, they got to regularly do these things anyway. And just like they're doing here in Missouri, they're going to be putting an audit together here in St. Louis as they are trying to figure out where some of this financing is going. It's overdue. But I also want to point out that some of this spending is actually secret spending. So they put it in there. They know they spend it, but they don't account for it, or they don't put it in the budget because they don't want people knowing how they spend it for security reasons. So I don't know what some of this money is being spent on. I guess it would be good. You could probably go in and actually look at the budget. It's probably something you can search for online and actually see where some of this money is going in the contracts they award. So I feel like they're pretty clear on most of those things, but then there's the other part of it where, you know, the money that goes to the secret programs that we're not talking about. But I want to go back to what Rand Paul said, and there's a reason why I wanted to play the Rand Paul thing. Can we afford to be in a dozen?
That.
Yeah. Can we afford to be in a dozen conflicts right now? No. And we got to be realistic. If we're going to be using our military and helping all these other countries, wasn't this something that Donald Trump was really big about in the election? Basically saying, if we're going to be renting our military and securing these areas, we need to get something back from these areas. We can't just do it on our own dime over and over and over again. They're going to have to contribute something. They're going to have to be invested if they want our help in these areas. So we're not doing it alone, because ultimately it's not helping them if they're going to depend on us and expect nothing in return. So we got to look at how we're spending our money, how we're using our military. And if we're going to put more money into the military, can we more effectively use it and maybe get some more money from our partners that are overseas where they can contribute more?
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you 100%. But the one thing I'm afraid of is that, you know, so we spend so much money into our military. I don't want it to be such a part of our economy to where we have to keep spending that much, or our economy goes downhill if we don't need it.
Hmm.
I think Eisenhower had something to say about that years and years ago, but I believe that we may have gotten into that. You know, we nobody's going to say anything about military spending because that would be political suicide. Everybody wants to wave the flag and support our troops as well. We should.
Uh-huh.
But I, don't you think, Ryan, this is just, I think there's probably some money, some people getting paid. It's too much money for somebody not to be stealing. I wish I had more faith in our government than that, but it's
hard to tell.
Somebody.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have, I mean, we do have a lot of service members in the military, maybe not just fully involved in foreign affairs, but I just did a quick search of U.S. Armed Forces. In 2017 fiscal year, there was 1.2 million service members with an additional 800,000 in the reserve. So if you think about it, too, you don't want to just start cutting the military because then you're affecting a lot of those people that depend on it for a, you know, for a paycheck, and they're doing other things too in the military. So yeah,
I didn't say cut it. Just make sure that it's getting to where it's supposed to go.
Right. Make sure it's being used appropriately, effectively, and we're not wasteful spending. Keith, yeah, you're right. Hey, thank you so much, Keith.
All right, thank you.
Good call from Keith. Let me bring in to Big Al. Understand, Big Al, this may be your expertise.
Yes, sir. I was at Boeing for 20 years, and now I'm a defense contractor. So I build spare parts. My company does for all the military stuff that Boeing and McDonnell Douglas has in the air, from the Blue Angels to the B-52. So This is my area, and I'll tell you all about it. That black part of the defense budget is exactly what you said. It's for working on things in the future, which turns out to be things like the F-22, the B-2, things like that, okay? Mm-hmm. And as far as the military spending goes, I can tell you firsthand that there are aircraft carriers sitting all over the world right now with my airplanes being scalped, okay, parked and scalped for spare parts so the others could keep flying. Mm-hmm. So there's literally F-18s sitting on carriers, and most of the carriers are carrying the F-18 right now, and they're being scalped to keep the others in the air and using them for part birds. And
wow,
that's the state our military is in right now. We're in a Jimmy Carter era rebuild, which Reagan did, thank God. And now Trump's got to do it. And the previous caller was exactly right. The F-22 came in at $410 million a copy after they cut it. And the cost went up. And now Lockheed, by the way, has it going on because they go in and go, we can do that, we can do that, we can do that. And then they get in the middle of it when it's too big to kill. And then they go, you know what, we can't do that. They've done it with the 22. Now they're doing it with the F-35. The F-35 was a complete joke. You try to put one airframe, spread it out over all the surfaces. It was a bad idea from the start. And that thing is underpowered, over budget. It's in bad trouble, and that's why, thank God, Trump and the Congress has woken up to the fact that we need to buy up more F-18s because the F-35 is not stealthy. The Chinese and the Russians already have the advanced capability to see it, mm-hmm. and the 22. So their stealth factor is completely out the window. Don't sell stealth to us, Lockheed, and let's go with what actually works, and that's my F-18 and my F-15 Eagle. So, it's a shame what goes on in Washington, and it's a shame that companies can get away with that. Boeing doesn't do that. We mm-hmm. build to what we think they want, and then Lockheed comes in, and it didn't hurt either that George Bush was from Texas.
Uh-huh.
So I'll just put it to you that way. when they bought General Dynamics, was in Texas, and they built the Joint Strike Fighter in the old Falcon plant, which is a mile long down in Fort Worth. I've been down there before talking to them about my company. So there's a lot of money being wasted out there. And what the government needs to do is get to things that actually work, because in the end, we're going to have a thing like the F-22 with that Joint Strike Fighter. They're going to keep cutting that. I mean, they sent a general in Boeing down there, and he was just like, he couldn't believe what he found down there, and he's still coaching them. And actually, I was down there as a company for him and trying to sell to him. And we were in a room, and they said, yeah, here's what we do with our suppliers. You know, if they have an issue or whatever, we coach them. We go in and work with them, and mm-hmm. we do this, and we hold their hand. And I raised my hand in the back of the room with 200 contractors in there. And I said, when do you decide to give it to a company like mine that gets it done on time every time the first time? Mm-hmm. And she looked like a robot that just got disconnected. It was not in her script. And the whole room erupted in applause because we're down there trying to tell these guys, hey, the suppliers you have aren't working, obviously, for whatever reason. So it's time to get them off the pot, and we're taxpayers, and we can do it better. Give it to us.
Wait, do you pay attention to this budget pretty closely when it comes to the defense spending?
Absolutely. It's my future, and I'm so thankful right now that they've realized, you know, what's going on. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount. I mean, we're going to be humming 24 hours a day when this budget hits, and thank God, to keep the boys in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking everything from the B-2 to the B-52 to the F-18 to the F-15. I mean, the Apache helicopter, you know, C-17, we build it all. And those guys are flying their wings off all over the world. We've got conflicts everywhere, and we have to be the police, unfortunately, because nobody else has the horse sense to do it.
Yeah.
And Trump's so right by telling these other countries, by the way, it's time for you to pay,
right?
Because we're running these huge deficits, and we're protecting you. In the meantime, you're out there doing everything and making all this money. Well, guess what? We're not going to defend. We will defend you, but you're going to pay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to redirect those to other places, and we'll have you a skeleton crew.
Yeah.
And by God, it's time for this world to wake up and realize that we're a God-fearing nation, and you can say what you want about our politics, but we're out there for everybody to be free, North Korea.
Yes, so, right. Big Al.
You know,
I love it.
I appreciate you, man.
Laying it out, man. You feeling okay, by the way?
All right.
Oh, he's gone. All right. I want to know if he's feeling okay. I mean, he woke up the other day. He was going through some health things. I just want to make sure he's healthy and happy. It sounds like he's got a lot on his mind. And when it comes to defense spending, you may think, what are they going to do with those billions of dollars? Well, you just heard it. You just heard it. I think the next question is, how are we going to make up for it? As opposed to putting ourselves further in debt, how are we going to make up for it? And let's start looking at some other means of income, right? Foreign countries, we're looking at you. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Making America great since 1925, KMOX.
A couple of things I want to point out, and then I am going to get to an interview coming up in the next segment with Discovery executive producer Pamela Deutsch. This documentary coming out on Valentine's Day night called He Lied About Everything. It was a match made in heaven. An NBC producer meets a well-respected and visionary doctor in Italy. They fall in love. They plan to get married. He was planning to put the whole wedding together until she found out the truth. Dun, dun, dun. It's almost as if Lifetime wrote this one. What a story. So that one's going to be perfect for Valentine's Day. If you and your loved one want to snuggle up and you're sick of the hugs and the kisses and the real cheesy type of movies, like, oh, will they, won't they? Oh, they did everyone happily ever after. How about you check out this documentary on Discovery Wednesday night? So we're going to talk to the executive producer of He Lied About Everything coming up in the next segment. I didn't get a chance to play these, but I still want to. President Trump talking about the infrastructure and the problem that we have right now. So the White House budget request would add $984 billion to the federal deficit next year, despite proposed cuts and to a lot of pretty insightful programs. This is why I want to read the budget by itself, because the last time a budget was proposed and they looked at it, they call them cuts, but technically they're still putting more money into it. They just don't think it's going to live up to what the expectations or the need of that program will be. So I do want to look more into that. For example, like over the years, they talked about Medicare, Medicaid spending, and the way they were projecting it over the next 10 years, they were still going to like increase spending 3% or something like that. But if they anticipate they need a 4% increase in 10 years, then you're going to run a deficit on that, which they call that a cut, but I don't really call it a cut. But then again, I haven't actually seen the physical type of budget. Maybe I should request one, have it sent over to me. I want to look into it more, because what I don't want to get is caught up into some of these headlines and give some of this misinformation. The White House is proposing a cut in a lot of different programs that are pretty essential if you think about it. Trump budget, which was drawn up before the package was complete, did not entirely embrace the law that he signed just days ago and proposes spending less on domestic programs than what Congress agreed to last week. So he's proposing about $11 billion of money to scale back the social safety net by changing the way health entitlement programs are paid for. That essentially means getting rid of mandatory programs now funded automatically without congressional approval and covering the cost of discretionary funds that would cut or redirect in the future. So it's tough. Like, even the Department of Urban Development budget proposes allowing public housing authorities and property owners to set minimum work requirements. So if you're going to be getting federal assistance or you're living in some of these areas, you got to at least do something. No more just free ride. So you got to at least show an effort that you're trying to get a job or getting a job or trying to contribute in some way. There's some of those things that in practice, it's a good idea. Now, I don't know if that qualifies for people with disabilities. I don't know what the qualifier for something like that is. But one of the big reasons that this big budget is looking at a deficit right now is because of the infrastructure. And they're proposing that, like, the Trump administration thinks there's going to be 3.1% economic growth over the next 3 years, but the Federal Reserve only projects 2.2%. So if that was the case, let's say even at 2.2% and the Trump administration says 3.1%, even at 3.1%, they're still running a huge deficit. So it's not like you're trying to figure out the difference between the two and then trying to find a safe zone. It doesn't matter to me. The size of the economy and the way it grows or more money coming into it, unless there's something big coming in that we don't know about. Like the president, for example, is about ready to announce a giant deal with another foreign country like they did with Japan or Saudi Arabia or whatever it is. And we're going to be producing some things for them. And there's going to be billions and billions and billions of dollars coming in we don't know about. Then, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it could be another thing. The way this budget is laying out right now, maybe they're just using this as a way to negotiate with the Democrats. If they're going to go into negotiation mode and try to figure out how we're going to be spending our money, you come in high and then you negotiate down to something more responsible. However, not a good strategy because Democrats, historically speaking, don't mind adding to the deficit. So this could be a bad strategy, too, if that's what they're trying to do. Lawmakers in both parties who essentially went around President Trump to strike their own budget compromise made it clear they have no intention to embrace this plan. There's just way too much money going out there. So the plan would allocate $13 billion in new spending to tackle the opioid crisis. And then they would spend more money on defense. They would spend more money on infrastructure. These are really key things that they need. And ultimately, they need to fund the wall. There's so much. There's a lot of things they need to do. They just don't know where to cut. They don't know where to cut. Here is President Trump talking about the infrastructure plan.
We're trying to build roads and bridges and fix bridges that are falling down. The framework will generate an unprecedented $1.5 to $1.7 trillion investment in American infrastructure. We're going to have a lot of public-private, and that way it gets done on time, on budget. It will speed the permit approval process from 10 years to 2 years and maybe even to 1 year. We will build, we will maintain, and the vast majority of Americans want to see us take care of our infrastructure.
Right. So that's, you know, we need it. We definitely need it. We know that we have a lot of issues. Remember like 10 years ago, that bridge in Minnesota was over in the, where was it? St. Paul area, I believe. Terrible, terrible. Problem is, that's not an isolated incident. There's a lot of bridges that need work done. There's a lot of roads that need work done. We are at a point where we are going to pay the piper, and it can't go much further. So we have to do this. We have to do this. What about defense? If we are at a point where we need to spend more money on defense, you heard Big Al. I mean, the guy's an expert when it comes to this. What are we doing for our military? How are we going to put it back up to where it needs to go?
The reason it was passed is because of our military. Our military was totally depleted, and we will have a military like we've never had before. We're going to have an incredible military. And to me, that means a couple of things. Number one, it does mean jobs, but really, number one, it means safety and security.
Right. Not just for the United States. Think of all the different areas that we safely secure currently. You know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was speaking to the press corps over in the White House talking about the debt, was asked about that.
Look, the president, one of the biggest and top priorities of the president's first year in office was to pass the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which we think will have a big impact on that moving forward. It's been a major focus on the economy, and the budget today that provides funding for the president's priorities, including national security. The president also knows that one of the most important jobs he has is protecting this country, therefore the need for rebuilding our military that had been ignored for so long.
All right, so we're doing a really big wager at this point, where it seems like we're at the Vegas tables and we're wagering that we will be able to get more revenue in. We're going to be able to grow the economy at a much faster rate. And with this money that's coming in, we're going to be able to get more contracts. And with that, we're not going to go as much in debt. Oh, boy. I mean, it's a big wager. But then again, there's all these things we have to do. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Get ready for the Blues and Predators Tuesday night. Pre-game skate 6:30. The puck drops at 7. Chris Gerber and Kelly Chase have all the action. Hear it here on your home for the best Blues coverage, KMOX.
Joining us now, the documentary He Lied About Everything, premiering this Wednesday, February 14th. It's not quite your typical date night documentary, but it's on Discovery starting at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Joining us now is executive producer Pamela Deutsch. Thanks for joining us on Overnight America.
Thanks for having me. We're really excited to roll out our special Valentine's Day fair this week.
Valentine's Day is the right time to tell this story. It's Benita Alexander and her fiancé, Paolo Macchiarini. Did I say that right? Because it's hard to say his name, but it's a wild ride these two went on.
Indeed. This is essentially a love story, but because we're Investigation Discovery, there's a twist, and it's a pretty big one in this case. And it all really begins with a news producer, Benita Alexander. She is working on an hour for NBC News about regenerative medicine, and in the process, she meets this very dashing surgeon, Paolo Macchiarini, and they fall in love. And before long, they're engaged and planning their wedding. Ooh. And when they're about 2 months out, she starts seeing a few little red flags. And what she then uncovers really sort of changes everything. And to say he's living a double life doesn't quite even really measure up. It's the lies this guy was telling were just pretty epic. And so she goes on sort of a journey of discovery to figure out who this person is.
Oh, boy. Well, how often does this happen? Like, let's say a journalist or a producer or a documentary, anyone, they go and they film. Do they ever get so close to their subjects? Things like this happen a lot?
You know, I think for journalists, it's frowned on generally.
Yeah.
And certainly Benita will admit to that. I think, you know, if you actually see the original hour she was working on, it's not hard to understand why she fell for him. They waited until, you know, production was done to kind of come out publicly as a couple. But, you know, I think when you're working very closely together over a period of months, and in particular, this is a very emotional subject with a lot of sick children. So he really, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
When did she have that moment where this is too good to be true? Like, when did she start to feel that way?
Well, you know, they were, I think, about 8 weeks from the wedding date. He had offered to, he wanted to do all of the planning himself. So she had to sort of, you know, sit on her hands and kind of take a leap of faith. So they were going to get married in Italy. He had a really auspicious guest list that included Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, you know, Elton John, and according to Paolo, Pope Francis was going to perform the nuptials.
Man, you're really shooting for the stars there if you're telling lies. That's a big one.
Yeah. Well, I think it sort of started slowly and gradually. And if you watch the film, you get a sense of really why, you know, why she believed him. He was, in a sense, this larger-than-life figure. He was doing these incredible surgeries that involved, you know, growing or kind of reproducing artificial tracheas in the lab and transplanting them into people. So, you know, everything about this man was larger than life. So I think, you know, when this happened, you know, she took it in stride. And then again, like 8 weeks before they were supposed to be wed, she found out that Pope Francis was actually going to be in South America at the time that he was supposedly in Italy performing the wedding. So that was sort of the first big red flag, and that sort of opened up a whole big can of worms. And then it sort of, you know, became a big watershed moment. And ultimately, Benita realized and found out that he wasn't, in fact, divorced from his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
So she sets off to on a fact-finding mission and to, you know, ultimately confront him. And she travels to 5 or 6 different countries in search of him and finds out all sorts of things along the way.
Normally, I would think someone with a background like that would have done the background check right up front, as in they would have had all this information.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why this is so dramatic, because she's an investigative journalist. And if someone like that can fall for it, you know, I don't know where that leaves the rest.
Well, what about this guy? So Paolo Macchiarini, did he have photoshopped pictures of himself with, like, the Pope to try to convince her? Or, like, was there any proof around that this could be legit?
You know, it's an interesting... I don't think that there were personal pictures, but as, you know, he sort of lived this kind of cagey life. He wouldn't, you know, he was traveling internationally quite a bit. He was working with this institute in Sweden, the Karolinska Institute, that actually issues the Nobel Prizes. Mm. So there was so much substance, or so she thought, behind his work that she just never questioned his credibility. And ultimately, he sort of told her, you know, I have to keep this quiet. I'm one of a list of a few elite doctors around the world that, you know, works on very important dignitaries. So in her mind, you know, there were no pictures, and it was something that he needed to be discreet about.
You know, if you want to feel good about your relationship, this is a great documentary to watch on Valentine's Day. You know, as a executive producer, by the way, in Discovery is going to be premiering this documentary, He Lied About Everything, Wednesday night, February 14th, 8 Eastern, 7 Central. Did you ever ask yourself, under the circumstances, would you have fallen for this person? Like, did you go through that with yourself and say, would I have fallen for this?
You know, I've got to wonder. I have to tell you, I've been with ID for almost a decade now, and I'd like to think that I know the red flags at this point. I've seen a lot of programming about people living double lives and imposters and con artists. But again, you know, I think when these people, the way that these people operate, they tend to go for, you know, the person who's a little bit vulnerable. And at the time that this happened, Benita, who was divorced, her ex-husband and the father of her daughter, was dying of cancer. So she was really emotionally raw. In comes this dashing surgeon who becomes like a real, you know, father figure to her daughter very quickly. And I think, you know, he just sort of took advantage of that emotional vulnerability. You know, it's like the Nile crocodile and the wildebeest. Go for the easy prey. So I think, you know, that's something to look for. You know, I think you see it again and again in these kinds of stories that they sense the vulnerability and go in for the kill.
Yep. Get your popcorn ready for this one. This is really fascinating. The documentary, He Lied About Everything, premiering on Discovery Wednesday night. Perfect Valentine's Day date night. 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Executive producer Pamela Deutsch. Thank you so much for sharing this story here on Overnight America.
Thank you for having me.
And she joins us on the Goodwill guest line, which you'll be able to find up in a little bit. If you're still looking for that last minute Valentine's Day gift, this is posted at KMOX.com. Cardinals, they've announced a special $5 ticket available for only 12 hours. So it's only good from now up until, what, tomorrow night, I think, Tuesday night. 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can go online to cardinals.com or you can go to the Busch Stadium box office during regular hours, or you could even call. The special ticket flash sale only available. And this isn't an ad. I'm not saying this because, you know, we're affiliated with the Cardinals. I'm actually letting you know because this is an awesome. Like, I'm going to talk to my wife tomorrow morning and say, honey, we should figure out a day we can go and take the kid. $5 tickets per game, you know, per person. Cardinals.com tomorrow morning. Get the news at KMOX.com. You can read up on that. Great Valentine's Day gift.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.